And our final presentation today is going to be by Ryan Treffers. Ryan has a degree in law from Northeastern University School of Law and is currently a legal policy researcher for the Pacific Institute for Research and Evaluation based in Santa Cruz, California, and he works on a range of public health issues, including the alcohol policy information system, which many of us find quite useful. And he's going to be talking about control state politics and Costco's victory in Washington. Ryan, take it away.
Yes, thank you. My name's Ryan Treffers. I also work with Bruce at Alcohol Justice and also have prepared this with Michelle Simon of Eat Drink Politics. And so I'm up here to bring some more, you know, bad news, and much of what I'm going to talk about, and there's many parallels with what Bruce was just speaking about with regard to the charge for harm things. And as the legal person working on things, I always feel that I'm the most pessimistic when you're speaking. You're usually the big optimist. So, so that said, quickly go through, state that there's no relationships to disclose. And so with the idea that, you know, the last question about, you know, whether fact-based campaigns, I think so often, unfortunately, the facts don't matter to the people voting. I think, you know, the question here, you know, was prohibition a colossal failure? And in many ways, yes, it was. But on the issue of alcohol consumption, it did reduce alcohol consumption in many areas, and also needs to be remembered that prohibition was a response to the time before that, where we had tied houses, vertically integrated businesses that were, you know, pumping alcohol into low-income neighborhoods, and many alcohol-related problems stemming from that. So prohibition was, you know, was a response to that, and not entirely a failure, and that is often forgotten. That said, the 21st Amendment was passed and repealing prohibition, and what that did was that it then handed off to the states effectively the control of alcohol. And the current systems that we have in place are a balancing of pre-prohibition era and the prohibition era, so that alcohol is legal, it's available, but also with controls that are intended to prevent harm to the public. Prior to January 1, 2011, there were 19 states that controlled alcohol sales in some capacity, so that there was, meaning that the government was the market actor and sold alcohol. Generally, this is with regard to liquor. In some states, I believe there's still wine, beer is licensed, meaning that, and as in most of the other states, alcohol sales being licensed, meaning that there is the state provides a license. There's three tiers. There's the person that produces the alcohol. There's the wholesaler, who is usually required to be based in the state. And then there's the retailer. And this three-tier system is intended to provide some accountability. And while wholesalers so often, you know, view themselves as being part of industry, they in fact have a public health purpose, and that is to be to be locally based and be responsive. Obviously, that isn't always the case, but in some senses, there is some alignment. Obviously, I'm not here to speak about that specifically, but just wanted to sort of put that out there, that we have these laws in place, whether it be control states or licensing, and all of that was intended to make sure that public health was protected in some capacity as a result of alcohol being sold. We have then the question you so often hear it, is the statement of that alcohol laws, you know, are they antiquated, and you know, that government control is bad, and that that also, you know, that privatizing will be good, and that it'll mean more revenue for the states. It also means that there'll be greater consumer choice, convenience, and finally also that, you know, that that also that the argument being that it's, there's no evidence that control states work. And, you know, as I hint at here, obviously the answer to all of these is false. That just because something is old doesn't mean that it's antiquated. I mean, the Constitution, we're always told, is that, we so often hear in the political discourse of how, you know, that the Constitution is so, you know, good because, and it is something that is old, that doesn't mean it's antiquated. And in contrast to the Constitution, which actually alcohol is now mentioned in it, but that said, our laws around alcohol laws and those that are being referred to as being antiquated, such as control states, these, in fact, are relatively recent in the historic sense. I mean, we're not talking more than, 1933, so not even 100 years. Government control of alcohol is bad. Control states, we generally think of as being better. We'll also presumably find out, and hopefully find out, as we do more, now that we have a control and experiment, we have an experimental group going on in experiment with Washington now, that it is the first state to fully change over from liquor to, from control to licensing, that we'll have more information around that. But we do know that alcohol control does work. More revenue, that's also up in the air. It's a complex issue, but for the most part, the answer isn't definitely yes, that privatizing would generate more money. In fact, likely it will be the opposite. And as for consumer benefit and choice and convenience, this is where we start to shift into what happened in Washington. Who does this really benefit? It ultimately benefits the larger corporate interest, because in Washington, who brought about this call for privatization? It was Costco. Costco is based in Washington, and because of the liquor control laws, it could not sell liquor, and it then went ahead and decided that it wanted to have that changed, and also other corporate interests as well would then go in on this, that the State Restaurant Association. And so at this time, Costco was the one that puts forward the initiative. Costco invested over $20 million was spent. You just had said that they had actually gotten some money back.
I think they they donated $21 million and got $5 million back that they didn't spend at the end of the campaign.
And so this has been a continued process. This wasn't the first year that this initiative had been put forward. This wasn't the first time that Costco had played a role in this. And so they threw money at this and outspent the opponents nearly 2-1 or over, 2-1, just about. And this is where it gets interesting, and actually why I started to mention about the wholesalers earlier on, that much of the no campaign funding was a result of the wine and spirits wholesalers. Once again, not to say that they are that their hands are clean in all of the problems that we face with alcohol, but at the same time, they do realize in some capacity that they are a result of regulation. They play some role, and if it were not for regulation, they would not exist. And so public health and the wholesalers had some issues that overlapped, and they played a role in looking to fight this initiative. And with regard to whether the best facts won, ultimately, no, the best facts did not win. You know, that, while we're getting the, it ends monopoly pricing and gets us out, gets everybody out of the liquor, or the government out of the liquor business, that isn't necessarily the best thing. Liquor stores that are run by the government are not costing the state money. They're actually generating revenue, and they exist for that purpose, both to generate revenue and to protect public health. And so they aren't actually looking to actually be in the business of it. They're looking to both protect public health and generate revenue. So I know I'm probably starting to start, lawyer double talk in some sense, but I think it is an important distinction, that that this isn't just about the government wanting to be in the alcohol business, that there is a greater good, which is, and that alcohol is unlike other products. And so the proponents of this initiative also, you know, threw in there other things such as that it would double the fines for selling to minors, but that's sort of like, you know, saying that we're going to cut the speed limit in half in an attempt to prevent people from speeding. That, you know, doesn't necessarily, it sounds good, but does it actually do anything that's, you know, that really isn't even the point. Prevents liquor sales at gas stations because liquor was only sold at the state-run stores. It wasn't sold at gas stations, but then again, the initiative wasn't totally clear as to who would be able to sell liquor at the end. Once the initiative passed, what licenses would be given out? You know, who is going to be able to sell it? And the way it actually was drafted, it limited it to really that new retailers were going to have 10,000 square feet or more, which basically pushes out any small businesses and really just hands it over to Walmart, Costco, Target, other large retailers, other large grocers. So, that this is going to help, this idea that this will help, you know, business, small business is not correct, is not accurate. It also, the statement of whether it restricts the number of liquor retailers, that's also unclear. And at present, the initiative it's still in the process of being implemented, and so it's not clear what all of the outcomes will be. It's not clear how many alcohol outlets will ultimately open as a result of this, that we don't know, whether places that were already selling beer and wine, whether they'll receive a liquor license, or if they will be kept out of the process. So that would mean with relation to smaller stores, what will the fiscal impact be? That's unclear. And prior to this, they weren't necessarily, the government had no idea what this would be. What the impact would be is unclear also due to the fact that we don't know, what taxes would need to be imposed, what fees would need to be imposed to replace the amount of money that is made by the government markup. And we also know, generally speaking, that higher alcohol prices mean, reduced rates in alcohol-related harm. If you don't know what the alcohol is going to cost afterwards, you don't know what the cost is going to be to the government revenue, and so enforcement may be down. You don't know ultimately what the cost will be to public health and safety. And obviously, in public health, we'd be very fearful of the idea that there'll be less revenue generated and that prices will go down. Ultimately, though, and in many ways, some of this has been found. I had recently seen the Association of Washington Cities had done a poll of police chiefs in Washington, and in that there was reports of increases in liquor theft, as well as increases in alcohol-related harm near grocery stores, and also that the law enforcement was seeing that it was going to need more enforcement activities to deal with these problems and was also going to need to rely on or wanted to get more support from the Liquor Control Board, which given the fact that the Liquor Control Board is now contracting as a result of privatization, this is sort of not a good time to be going to them for that. And then at the same time, prices on alcohol, now that privatization has started to go through, prices are actually up, which from the public health standpoint is not a bad thing on liquor, that it has potentially reduces alcohol-related harm and also slows the call for privatization, because Washington, of the 19 states, was not the only state that this is going on in. Idaho, Oregon have been two states that were also in the process of having talks and people wanting to privatize, and as well as Pennsylvania, which is always sort of an open question. And the fact that alcohol prices have gone up sort of cuts against that whole proponent's argument of that this would be good for consumers. So consumers have not been happy about this. And as a result, and this is not unexpected either, is that as soon as we are in this position of higher prices due to taxes and fees, we have, you know, now the, you know, various tax groups, you know, out there yelling and screaming that the alcohol taxes need to be lowered. And we're now in a battle in Washington in the same place that, you know, we are in California, we are, you know, that are in New York and in every other licensed state. And also alcohol sales are up in other states. So in Oregon and Idaho on the border side. So what's next in Washington? The implementation will still be going on through next year. And we also know that there was the opponents to the initiative. They had two cases pending. Those were both thrown out. That was thrown out by the Washington State Supreme Court. Ironically, though, now the initiative proponents have filed a lawsuit seeking to stop the Liquor Commission from proceeding with some of the rules that it has put in place. And so these are the people that wrote the law and that are now mad at what's going on and yelling that this all hurts, all hurts small business. And I think, you know, this is something that's good for other control states to hear and to incorporate into arguments when trying to protect control states, that basically you're going to be dragged into all sorts of lawsuits as well, that the possibility of prices going up and so on. And I briefly mentioned this before, yes, I forgot, Virginia also is one of the states that is often in the mix of states that may be privatizing at some point. And so, not to be all dreary, there is a lot, I think, that we learn from Washington, the fight in Washington, as well as the Charge for Harm fight. And these are, you know, that we need to get informed and know the facts, you know, that public health has to take an active role in this, and that we need to be prepared for the arguments made by the other side. And ultimately, this really isn't about consumers. This is about corporations looking to, you know, to make profits at the expense of the public. And Bruce illustrated that with a lot of slides showing how much money is, you know, the state is paying, or California is, but obviously other states as well. The reframing of the debate, I think, is also an important one, this idea that government is bad, or that you know, taxes on alcohol are sin taxes, or that we are looking, you know, to legislate morals. But then, that isn't the case. We do use taxes often to reduce activities that we don't, you know, like, or with regard to, you know, government being bad, there's a lot of good things the government does as well. And I mean, I also think with regard to legislating morals, this isn't necessarily a moral issue. This is an issue of state revenue and public safety. And, you know, finally, this is an issue of lining up, broad-based coalition. I think that's a very important one. And from this, in this instance, you know, that you may find strange, adversity making strange bedfellows, that we have people, that the wholesalers were somebody that in this specific instance were of, had our interests were all aligned. And so that pretty much wraps up what I have to say. So thank you very much.
Well, thanks very much, Ryan. So we'll open up about 5 minutes for questions. Free.
I have a question for Ryan. With these changes that have occurred in Washington State, and particularly with your slide on local police departments getting concerned, what are the prospects for increasing local controls at the city, the municipal, or the county level on these new retail outlets? Because there's a lot of technology available for doing that. California is working on it. And that's one question. The second question is on I guess I'd like to hear more about what's happening with the Washington State Liquor Control Commission, how it is really shifting its focus to manage the privatized industry. And there seem to be a lot of opportunities there for injecting public health and public safety surveillance mechanisms and oversight mechanisms in the way the board operates. I would like
you
to discuss that.
Okay. Well, with regard to the first question as to sort of what can local enforcement do, I can't specifically speak to it. As a Californian, I'm not versed well enough in what Washington laws are or what level of control they have. So ultimately, it's what I'm always talking about, an issue of preemption and how much authority is given to localities. I believe, if I remember, I have done a little sort of over-the-top research of all states, and I vaguely remember Washington is sort of middle of the road that they allow for some. So I think to that issue, it would be, looking to states like California and other sort of ideas such as being able to apply, because a lot of this becomes an issue of money and tying that to enforcement. So what Linda was speaking about, and also charge for harm type things. But I think there are lots of things that can be done at a local level, and ultimately, though, that will be dictated by how much of the liquor control is preempted by the state. With regards to your second question about whether, what the exact transformations are and how public health could be further injected into the liquor Liquor Commission and the new rules and regulations that'll be coming out. I mean, that will ultimately be something that I think, advocates at that level. I unfortunately going to have to sort of quasi punt it, not knowing enough specifically about it. But I think, obviously there'll be the rulemaking process, and whatever advocates can do to insert themselves into that will be good. Unfortunately, again, we are also talking about, that this is only one of three, beverage types, that some of this structure is already in place with regard to beer and wine. So some of those greater public health issues may already be quasi-resolved. So I think I'm being a little overly dramatic in doom and gloom. I think there's a lot more, but unfortunately, as you say, at this point, I can't really fully say as to, what exactly is going on, so.
Like to be hanging in the air then that this is sort of an open invitation to the advocacy community, to the Washington State public health people, to the public safety community to get themselves organized to take advantage of this opportunity. And it's, I would hope they would do that.
That's what I.
Here in the United Kingdom, the large grocery store chains there use alcohol as a price leader to get people into the store at various prices. Why haven't we seen that in Washington? Do you think that will come with time? Is there a closer way with comfort people?
There are some, giving it for the record that, using alcohol as a price leader in Washington, there are some price controls still in place in Washington. There's some controls as to who can, how alcohol can be acquired still. So, it's going to now be coming from the wholesaler, obviously. And I think, obviously, that is always a concern, and that is likely, whether within the current structure, if the prices will be driven down is yet to be seen. But that if they aren't, if the current structure, if there's rulings saying that it won't be allowed, very well that the lobbyists will be back in there pushing to have those regulations, those laws weakened, or lawsuits being filed, which we've already in fact seen on the issue by the proponents of the initiative on the issue of that the lawsuit had been filed was based on how much alcohol could be purchased by a on sale like restaurant retailer at a given time. So I think that is always a concern, and at the moment I think it is not an immediate one, but will be one very soon.
I'd like to comment on that too.
I'd like to hear from Ted too.
Just on that last question, I forget her name, the woman from Arizona who was formerly from Oregon who did all the studies on on England. Well, I mean, you've got like, what is it, Tesco or, you know, the Fresh and Easy folks were really leading it to the bottom in England on using alcohol sales to get people in the door. You know, they've been moving into California, and we've been trying to control that, working with UFCW on fighting self-checkout of alcohol. It's not really happening, but remember, what's really going on in Washington is that Costco is now controlling spirit sales. They're huge, and this may be one of those rare instances where higher prices on spirits is not affecting their sales, and maybe they're doing cost cutting on flavored malt beverages or beers too. We don't actually have the studies on the ground to see what's really happening with sales, and increased outlets, increased availability might mitigate the fact that the prices are higher because people don't have commuting costs to go get their liquor. We're not quite sure what happened in Washington, except that some of the biggest corporations in our country won. You can bet that they're going to figure out a path to make tons of money off of it and tons of alcohol sales, because it could just be spirit sales go down. It was nice of them to offer jobs for all the former government employees at Costco, you know, pretty cynical, but they're pretty happy these days.
Yeah, I think the short answer to the loss leader question is that the three-tier system for beer is still in place in Washington, and beer is the more likely product for the loss leader than spirits. Spirits three-tier in Washington has been eroded to some extent, but the very high taxes put in place make it difficult for them to get the prices lower than they were before, or low really in any sense compared to other American prices. But that's a really important question, because this is the first time that three-tier has been broken down in the U.S., and it really highlights the interest of industry in doing that in the rest of the country. And I think that, not just the privatization of monopolies, but the three-tier is going to be a big fight in the future.
Yeah, Ed? Two things. One is, I've urged you to stop using that Atkins slide. NAPCA has made the mistake of mixing up post-sale control and retail control. And then they get nabbed by the people on the conservative side of the Cato Institute, who said, oh, look, it didn't make any difference that there was control, because they mix in the wholesale control state, and your slide's doing the same thing. Get that slide to just places with retail controls that are sensible, that are sensibly controlled. It's a different slide. And with Washington State, as you said, Costco basically took over the entire wholesale system. They're a monopolist right now. They've got the great deal that they can jack the price way up. And when people complain, they say, oh, well, look at this high tax. As long as they can get away with that, they're putting huge amounts in their pocket. And yeah, at some point, they'll probably bring the price down. But they don't need to right now. They've got huge dominance in that market, and they're just putting it in their pocket as long as they can.
It's an interesting...
a different behavior than they'll use.
Yeah, it's an interesting point, because you on your slides mentioned monopoly pricing by the government states. And one of the important things I think to note about control states is that they don't engage in monopoly pricing as it would be defined by economists, or in monopoly location of outlets. A monopoly would do everything to get as much money as possible. They would have fewer outlets and higher prices than existing control states would have if a private monopoly was in place. And because they'd save money by closing stores, and you couldn't buy it anywhere else. It's important to recognize that the existing control systems are not just trying to make money; they're trying to provide this product in a safe way that raises money, but also gets the product to people in the state, and they distribute stores around the state in ways that are attentive to low population areas, and they don't make the prices at the level that would raise as much money as possible, even though they could. Yeah.
I think I've always been uncomfortable with even using the term monopoly states. I mean, that was Rockefeller and Fosdick who made that up back in 1932. And it's silly, but we sort of use it. Maybe we should just talk about control states. But I was just thinking, spirit sales really flourish during the holiday season. So I really am interested what happens this year, because, you know, I've gone to Costco myself and you buy your holiday alcohol, and I'm not doing it again, folks. You know, one of the things the Thailand Health Agency, the alcohol agency there, is doing is a campaign against alcohol gifts. And I just love it because, you know, I think it's like 40 or 50% of spirit sales are during the holiday season. And this is when we'll really see what the price is. And, but we don't know the volume that they're selling at that price. Maybe people are doing it anyway.
Why not boycott Costco?
That might be a larger issue, but
well,
boycott the alcohol.
The issue, we should all share our cards.
Costco burning.
Costco card. We did it years ago with Nestle. We did that with Nestle. It was very effective.
But they're plastic.
All right, well.
Actually, there's another piece of it. The prices are up on Seagram 7, but that encourages you to buy Kirkland Scotch.
Yeah.
Or
that,
Life Hard Lemonade, which
that is
a really popular in Washington.
Right, but
because
Kirkland
it's so close
Scotch
to Canada,
is,
you know.
They made it, so they get all the profit.
Yeah, that's.
So if they can differential price and raise the price on everybody else's spirits.
Yeah.
So if people are saying, oh, well, the only Scotch that I can afford is the Kirkland. They've just taken Diageo sales and converted them into Costco sales.
Yeah, I think, and
the product itself.
Now you're making
so
me paranoid.
So there's really a lot of monopolist play going on.
Yeah, the spirits producers are recognizing that this wasn't in their interest, and you can see in the industry media, they're already talking about the fact that you know this is hurting them, and it's helping specific groups like Costco, supermarkets, Trader Joe's to some extent, and it's not good for the wholesalers. So often the best you can do is get the industry fighting against itself because nobody else has the money to fight them. And this is certainly a case where we need to make the most out of those clashes.
That's how the first round of initiatives were beat. It was because the beer wholesalers were on the side of
because it's definitely, I mean, this change to not having a three-tier system for spirits in Washington is really a historic change in the U.S. and something that needs to be studied and watched and a big concern for other states, I think. All right, so thanks to everybody for coming. I think we're all done. You can talk to the...